This is a new episode of the LCJ Q&A podcast. I'm Lights Camera Jackson. Thank you for listening. Joining me right now, the host of the Duncan Trussell Family Hour podcast and the co-creator and star of the new animated series, The Midnight Gospel. A lot of people are going to be talking about this. It premieres Monday, April 20th on Netflix. Duncan Trussell, it's an honor for me to have you on my podcast. This is really cool.
Thank you. It's an honor to be on your podcast. Thanks for having me.
You created this show with Pendleton Ward, the creator of Adventure Time, such a huge hit for Cartoon Network. How did you two come up with the idea for this very unique concept for Midnight Gospel?
The beginning idea was just the question, is there a way to make podcasts and animation go together in a unique way that hasn't already been done? Because, you know, there's plenty of podcasts where they animate just people talking like they're in a podcast, which seems like a lot of work when you could just film people talking. And then there's, you know, I don't know if you've seen the animation of podcasts where this sort of like an illustration of whatever the story is they're telling. And we didn't want to do that. So the idea we started working with was at the end of the world, people are probably still going to be having like conversations that aren't necessarily about the end of the world. And I think we're kind of experiencing that right now, though I wouldn't call it the end of the world. It's certainly an apocalyptic moment for history. And so we realized that if you put podcast conversation to action and drama, it creates this innately hilarious comedic effect, sometimes a really poignant effect as well. And so that was sort of the origination of it. And then from there, we learned how to tie podcast dialogue to animation. Because it's one thing that, you know, if you don't figure out a way to make the podcast or the conversation merge with the world that it's happening in, then the podcast kind of becomes like background music, you know, with lip sync. So that was one of the challenges of the show, was how do you make it so that these two things merge perfectly together? Otherwise, in the beginning phases of it, kind of made your brain feel like it was ripping apart, because you'd have this podcast conversation that you wanted to listen to, and then you have this action, this incredible animation that was happening, and the two, if there was any unlinking of the two, then it created this strange dissonance. And so we had to learn how to tie them together. And I'm happy to say some people who've watched it are surprised when they hear that it wasn't scripted for the series.
It is unlike anything I have seen in animation, honestly. I watched the first couple episodes a couple weeks ago, and as I'm watching it, what really impressed me, and what's going to impress you, everybody listening to this, is how well it flows. That flow feels so natural because you've got the comedy, you've got the poignant moments, you've got the conversations, and you blend them all together. So that getting that flow right seemed to be one of the big challenges for you guys?
Oh, yes. That was, for me, it was a double challenge. The only comparison I have for this is the world of comedy. It's kind of an inside world. And, you know, once you're in it, you're in it. But before you're in it, you can really, you know, it's like you have to, like, you know, earn your stripes. And I realized with the world of animation, it's identical. It's just a different art form that is being perfected. And so I got lucky because, you know, I came in with Pendleton, who is deeply respected, and that's a well-earned respect. He's brilliant. He's a brilliant animator, and he's a brilliant in every level of animation, including, like, how do we sort of allow everyone to have a creative input into the process, which, anyway, I was dealing with two challenges. One was what you're talking about, which is we realized that it was going to be way more difficult than we expected to tie these two things together in a coherent way. We began to understand that we had to make decisions about the way we have a plot. Because if you have too much of a plot, then people's minds get pulled out of the conversation into that plot. But if you don't have enough plot, then the thing gets diffused. And every single episode presented its own unique challenge and how to deal with getting the podcast conversation to merge with the world that it was happening within. That was a challenge. And then the other challenge I had was being a complete neophyte when it comes to animation. And so soon I began to realize, like, oh, okay, these animatics and the stuff I'm looking at, it's similar to, like, looking at an ultrasound of a baby. Hmm. You know, and you can't, but I didn't have, in the early weeks and months of this, I didn't have the ability to see through the animatic, to see through the rough sketches, to see through the lack of specific movements in certain parts that would help underline a joke or amplify a joke. I didn't have the ability to project that onto it because I'd never done animation before. Hmm. But Pendleton and Mike Mayfield and all the folks at Titmouse, they were, thank God, so patient with me and compassionate. And, you know, I remember Mike Mayfield, our director, at one point, he just said, just so you know, Duncan, the way you're reacting right now to it is how everyone reacts the first time they see the beginning phase of animation. Mm-hmm. And I feel so lucky that I was working with people who had that level of experience, who realistically could sort of help me relax and also show me ways that I could look through the precursor phases into what it was going to become so that I could help write the comedy part of it.
Yeah.
But it was every episode was a brand new challenge, a brand new world, a brand new series of things we had to work through to make the animation and the dialogue merge in a way that wasn't disruptive to the flow of the plot.
Sure, sure. And the first episode features Dr. Drew, and it's called Taste of the King, and he voices the U.S. president on a version of Earth that's dealing with a zombie apocalypse. It reminded me, it's like a revamp of three 2013 movies, Olympus Has Fallen, White House Down, and World War Z. It's kind of all of them together with your spin on it. Were you really influenced by those movies and some other kind of zombie films to make this the first episode plotline?
Well, yeah, I mean, I love zombie movies, and I especially love the Walking Dead comic books, and Pendleton also is a fan of that genre. And so, you know, with that particular episode, we sat down with for 2 weeks with some comedy writers, some a witch, an occultist, and various people that we thought could have some insight into how the world might end, including Weird Al Yankovic. So it was one of the most fun writing camps I've ever had. And, you know, clearly one of the, like, staples of the apocalypse when you're watching movies is zombies. That's one of the ways that the world ends, is, you know, a zombie apocalypse. And so that was the one I think at the time we were most familiar with, and so that became the first episode. And it's really, I think, like watching President Dr. Drew have to, like, take on the burden of the world, shoulder the burden of single-handedly attempting to take these zombies on, creates this really beautiful, poignant commentary on what it's like to be a leader at that level. But we were influenced by many zombie movies.
Cool. Yeah, I think the episode is a major success. You guys are going to be blown away by this. The Midnight Gospel. Duncan Trussell is my guest right now on the LCJ Q&A. And you voice the main character, Clancy. And purple is my favorite color. I love his look because between his skin and his hair and his hat, it's kind of 3 or 4 or 5 shades of purple to pink. How did you ultimately decide on this color combo for him?
Well, you know, after the fact, I realized that that's the palette of my podcast, and I didn't pick that. When we went through those beginning phases, we sat and looked at all kinds of possibilities for creating a color for Clancy, and I think our thinking with it was we don't want this to be so much chained to the earth, so to speak, you know? Hmm. And so I know that basing his color on as far as I'm aware, I guess people who drink too much colloidal silver turn like Smurf blue, but as far as I'm aware, there's no human beings that is that shade. And if you are that shape, something's probably happening. That's like a problem.
Yeah.
But so similarly, like when we were exploring using, in the beginning we were thinking like, do we do like religious apocalypses? Do we, you know, model some of these apocalypses after, say, the Book of Revelations or some like ideas of how the world might end from in Hinduism? Well, and we realize that if we do that, then we sort of tether this world to our world here. And we found that to be a kind of limiting factor. So I know one of our considerations was we want the chromatic ribbon where Clancy lives and that dimension, it's a different dimension than ours. Mm. And so many other aspects of the show might seem similar to stuff here on planet Earth, but we were always making the decision to make sure that this wasn't alien in the sense of being completely unfamiliar, but was more hyperdimensional.
All right. That makes sense. Absolutely. And because you've been doing your podcast, and then certainly a lot goes into making an animated series, especially like this, what has your schedule honestly been like over the last year or so?
Thanks for asking. It's been crazy. It's been crazy. And to add to that, I was lucky enough to have this beautiful son during this time. He's now 14-month-old toddler. But during this show, I was also dealing with being a new parent and trying as much as I could to support my wife and do a podcast and do an animated series. It all happened simultaneously. And so there was no break. There was no resting or anything like that. It was just nonstop. And it was a delight. You know, I've never gotten the chance to work with such brilliant people and to be a titmouse surrounded by all these geniuses. And I'd never experienced anything at that level before. So it was really quite joyful, but exhausting.
Well, it is going to be quite a while before your son can watch this show, but I'm sure he will be... He'll be really proud of you when he's finally able to watch it, yeah.
Thank you so much. He can watch it right now because he's still a little pre-language, I think. They understand way more words than they can speak. But, yeah, I know what you mean. We're pretty much at the end of him being able to see any scenes from the show.
What are you guys watching now? What are the animated programs that you're watching during this crazy coronavirus time that we're living in?
I'm so glad you asked that, man. So when I was a kid, there was a movie that came out called The Last Unicorn. So I sat down with my wife. I'm like, let's just watch this. This meant a lot to me when I was a kid. I watched it when I was a kid, it blew my mind. It didn't age well, man. But still, after having done animation and had the experience with it, it's like, oh my God, look at that. That's beautiful. It's so, my respect for animation. In the old days, you know, I would watch some animated thing and be so intensely judgmental of it, not even understanding the amount of just blood, sweat, and tears that goes into every frame of any animation of note. You know, so I've been watching The Last Unicorn, and also I've been watching Pinocchio with my son, which is a mind melter. Having made an animated series and understanding what technology they were using to make that movie, knowing what they must have gone through to make that, and just looking at the artistry and just the beauty behind it. It's like it literally makes me tear up watching it. But also because I'm watching it with my son. He's like, you know, just seeing someone witness Pinocchio for the first time is pretty transcendental.
An all-time animated classic. That's so nice that you're able to do that. That's great. Yeah. So Duncan, is there a chance you're going to do sort of a spin-off or special series of your podcast devoted to every episode of The Midnight Gospel?
What a great idea. Now there is that you gave me the best idea ever. Sure. I think that's great to do some kind of supplementary. Yeah, that would be really, I would love to do that. In fact, I mean, let it be out there for a little while and then sort of talk about it. That being said, you know, going into the symbolism of it or what it means to me, I feel extremely hesitant to say too much about that because I really do want people to be able to use it as a kind of screen that they can project, you know, their own subconscious onto. Because, you know, it was many of the people involved in the production, they really were amazing at weaving into the tapestry of the show a lot of deep stuff. But, you know, maybe that stuff is just stuff that I'm seeing and it's inside of me. You know, I don't know. One of the ways that Pendleton works is it's really amazing is that he's just incredibly inclusive when it comes to the creative process. And everyone on the crew, hopefully, felt included in that process. And they weren't like, they were included. Like anybody who had a great idea or anybody who wanted to contribute or if the anime, you know, we were so blessed in that we were able to make a show that didn't have to adhere to some of the strict aspects of animation that other shows have to adhere to. Also, all our animators were in-house. Mm. So the animators realized that they had a lot of scope within which to experiment with the form itself. As long as there was coherence, you know, between the frames and the scenes, we really did encourage them to experiment and to do, you know, to come up with their own ideas and flourishes. And I think a lot of them felt like they really were being allowed to be the artists that they are and not, you know, smushed into some rigid form. And that led to a depth that I think that led to, like, some of the unique qualities of the show because some kind of group mind formed. And Pendleton was the sorcerer behind that group mind, like allowing that to form and trusting that the many sparks of ideas that came from the animators and from anyone at Titmouse had the potential to flower into something beautiful, and many of them did.
It is new, it is bold, it is innovative. The Midnight Gospel, Monday, April 20th on Netflix. Duncan Trussell, thank you so much for being on the LCJ Q&A podcast today. So cool talking about this show with you. And yeah, I think put the episodes out there and wait a little bit, and I think everybody will want to hear even more about the thoughts and the process behind this series.
Wow, thank you. I really appreciate your time, and thank you so much for letting me be on the show.
I'm Lights, Camera, Jackson. For more, go to lights-camera-jackson.com, Apple Podcasts, and Spotify. See you next time on the LCJ Q&A.